All right, welcome to class today. Glad to see you all here. Before we begin, any comments, questions, or other things for me which are not related to the exam on Monday? Yes?
Do you have a mock exam?
Do I have a mock exam? No. But you're welcome to point your finger and laugh at it when it shows up. Sorry. No, I do not have a mock exam. Other questions? Okay, so in that case, let's talk about the exam. That's our topic for today, is the exam. So, the test will be held here on Monday. If you think you are not taking the exam here on Monday, you should already know what you're doing otherwise. You should all have made arrangements with me or with the LNEC and had them confirmed. If you think you aren't going to be here on Monday and have not had whatever you think is going to happen confirmed, then do that now. And hopefully it isn't too late. The test will be 50 minutes long. Some non-trivial subset of you will run right up to the time limit. This is okay. It doesn't mean you failed the test. So let's talk about what's going to be on the exam. So the basic structure I'm planning for today, I'm just going to talk about the things that will be on the exam. I think all of these are things you've already seen, so I'm not going to devote any particular time to them unless you tell me to. So if at some point you think, ooh, I want to know more about that, raise your hand high enough that I can see it, and we'll adjust that immediately. So what you should know about the format of the exam. There will be questions of various types. There may be some multiple choice, there may not. There may be some fill in the blank, there may not. There may be some short answer, there may not. But there will be at least one coding question that involves a bit of problem solving. So I give you a description of something I want the code to do, and you write code to do that on paper. There will be one of these. There may be more than one of these. There will also be questions that involve, here is some code, tell me what it does. Or here is some code, tell me why it doesn't work. So you will be required to read and write code on the exam. There are some topics that we have discussed but will not be on the exam. So the encryption chase activity that we did, the chase itself and the material that was covered only in the chase is not on the exam. File writing is not on the exam. We talked about both file reading and writing on Monday. File reading is fair game, as it was covered in the lab recently, but the writing part is not. Arrays, which we talked about on Wednesday, not on the exam. Any part of Java that we only talked about during our initial Let's Play Around with Turtles section of the course is not on the exam, so you don't have to worry about how to write methods, for example. We talked about that for the turtles, but we did not talk about it since, so it will not be on the exam. And you don't have to know imports. As in, you don't have to know any particular import. You don't have to know what you need to import in order to get to a scanner. We're not going to test you on that. So those are the things we have talked about, but we are not testing you on. Things we are testing you on. Roughly in the order we discussed them. CS in general. What is computer science? What are computers? Where are they? What's the ambiguity? What's it got to do with CS? Why is it important? These are fairly vaguely stated, and therefore, if questions are asked on these subjects, they'll be of fairly vague nature. Say something about these ideas. You should be able to identify, write, and know where to place the basic pieces of a program. So you should know where import statements go and what they look like. You should know about the public class name, class declaration thing. You should know about the main header. You should be able to write public static void main string bracket bracket args. Even if I don't tell you what it looks like, you should be able to write that. You don't necessarily need to know what all the pieces mean, but you should know what it is. And you should know what curly braces do, what parentheses do, what semicolons do, and what periods do, or at least where they belong. Primitives. There are 8 primitive types. We have mentioned this multiple times. You should know the names of all 8. And also know how to use the 3 we've used a lot. So the 8 are int, double, char, and boolean, which we've used a fair amount. There is also float, which is like unto double. And there is also short, long, and bite, which are like unto int. Those are the eight. You should know what they are. You should know how to use the three we've used in homeworks. Ints, doubles, and chars, or characters. Okay? You should know how they behave, how math works on them, etc., etc. You should know how casting works. So you should know how to turn a double into an int using casting. You should know how to turn an int into a double using casting. You should know what that works and how you write it. You should know the operators that we have discussed, including the less common ones like modulo and plus equals and plus plus. You should know the difference between integer division and division for double values. You should know the comparison operators, less than equal, not equal, etc. And the Boolean operators, not, and or. And how they work, what they're for. You should know how to declare a variable, int x. And you should know how to change the value of a variable, x equals 7. And you should know the basic methods of the math library, three of them. There are lots of methods in the math library. There are three I will expect you to know about without telling you on the exam. Okay? So I expect you to know how to use these if necessary to solve a problem. Math.pow, raise a number to a power. Math.squareRoot, take the square root of a number. And math.random, generate a random number between 0 and 1, not including 1. I also expect you to know about objects. So I expect you to know that all types that are not one of the eight primitive types are an object or complex or reference or whatever you want to call it, a more complicated type, and what that means. Such as, for example, that you cannot use operators on an object. You need to use methods instead. In particular, dot equals compares strings, equals equals doesn't. You should know how to use new. You should understand how to invoke methods and the syntax of that, right? So if I want to say scanner has next, I say the name of the scanner dot has next parentheses. You should know about the dot and the parentheses are involved in that invocation of a method. You should also know the basic methods of strings and scanners. Okay, so the basic methods of strings, some of these we've touched a lot more than others. So char at and replace, you should know how they work pretty well. You should at least have some vague idea what substring and index of are, as we talked about when we first introduced strings. The rest of the string methods, if we want you to know about them, we will describe them in the description of the problem. And for scanner, you should know the various next and has next methods. And then you should know about if, while, for. Okay? So what's an if? What's an if else? What's an if else? How does scope work? The idea if you declare a variable inside curly braces, it doesn't exist thereafter. And you should be able to say of a switch statement that it is kind of like an if. And that's about all you need to be able to say about it. Of loops, you need to know how to both ifs and loops, you need to both be able to write and read code that uses them. So you should be able to write while and for code. You should be able to read while for and do while code. You don't have to write a do while loop, but you should know how to read it. And you should know how to write the two basic kinds of loops, something that repeats something a fixed number of times, usually a for loop, and something that repeats something for every piece of input there is. Those are the topics for the exam. Are there any subset of those you want me to talk more about? Yes? Switch statement. All you need to know about the switch statement is that it's kind of like an if and that we don't use it in this class. Yes?
It's an all-inclusive list. Everything on the test.
Is this an all-inclusive list? No. It is a list of the things I think are important. Okay? But for example, you should also know what 2 plus 3 is. Yep. You should probably know things like the order of letters in the alphabet, right? I'm assuming you have this kind of information. Yes? Are break and continue on the exam. So break and continue are part of how you write loops. Okay, I didn't mention them explicitly, but they are topics that I expect you to be at least marginally familiar with.
I'm a little bit confused on the forward slash between int and double. Can you clarify that?
You mean the way I wrote it up here? This one? I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry. Oh, how? Okay, so what is slash? What operator is that?
Oh, just divide.
Yep.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's a meaningful question, right? Because slash also means something in text. Yes.
We're talking about the link to the table.
This is in the lecture notes on the course website. Okay, this is lecture 17, so that's where it is. Yes.
Is it called a module?
Module, yes, the percent sign. Okay. Let's talk about modulo. Int x equals 3, 5, int y equals 3, int r equals x mod 3. X mod y, rather. Modulo gives me the remainder of doing division. So if I say 5 mod 3, that is going to be the remainder that is left over after I divide 5 by 3, which is 2. Okay. Why is it 2? It is 2 because 5 divided by 3 is 1, remainder 2. So R is 2. Do you want me to say any more about it?
No.
Modulo actually works for doubles too, but we have never seen that in practice and won't test you on that fact either. Anything else you'd like me to speak more about? Yes. How to read new? Do. How to read a do loop? Yes. Okay, so suppose you see a do loop. Okay. Do loops will have some general form like this. So a do loop will have a do, something in curly braces, and a while at the end. It acts just like a while loop, with one exception. It always runs at least once. Okay? So as I've written right here, it won't do anything particularly interesting. It'll take my x, it will add 1 to it until it hits 10. But it will still do that even if x starts too big for that to make sense. Okay? So do acts just like while, except that even if the condition is false, it still happens once. Do you want me to say anything more about it? You who asked the question. Nope. Yes? Do you need to know the ASCII chart? You do not need to know what letter goes with what number. Okay? You should know that letters go with numbers, and you should have the general idea that, for example, letters are next to each other, right? So if I add 3 to D, it will be 3 letters down from D. That kind of structure you should know. Beyond that, no. Yes? Yes, casting. So first, let's start with the concept of casting. Casting is used to change things from one primitive type into another primitive type. There are casts that work for non-primitive types, but they're kind of weird, and so far we haven't ever seen them. They won't be on the exam. So casting works on primitives. And it changes one type to another as long as there is a way for that to make sense. Okay? So if we take this example we have right here, if I were to cast R as a double, then instead of printing out R as, I believe, 2 in this case, it'll print out R as 2.0, okay? The double equivalent. So I can change ints to doubles. I can also change ints to characters. This will go back to the ASCII chart, so I better make something that shows up there. Oh, nope. Wow, okay. Oh, R, right. I can't do R. I want to do X. There we are. Okay. So if I cast an integer as a character, I get the corresponding character in the ASCII chart, right? 95 happens to be an underscore. Okay. Of course, these also work the other direction. So just as I can cast to character, I can also cast from character. Okay? And that works as well. And I can also cast between double and character. Okay? It just all plays nicely. The only interesting thing that happens is that if I try to cast a double into just about any other type, I will lose the remainder. I will lose everything after the dot. Okay? So, if I were to, for example, cast 3.9 or negative 3.9 to int, both of those will just drop the 0.9. Do you want me to say anything more about casting? Yes? There is a method called integer.parseInt that turns a string into an integer, but it is not something we have discussed in class, not something we've required you to use in a homework assignment, and therefore not something that will be on the exam. If you want to use it, and this is generally true, if you know something that we have not discussed in particular, but you think will help you solve a problem, you can in general use it. Okay? So we've talked about how to use math.random to make random numbers. There is also a random class. If you want to use a random class instead of math.random, you can. But we won't ask you explicitly about those. Anything else? Yes? How do you make a new object? Yes, what kind of object do you want me to make? Anything but scanner. Great. How about a file? Making a new object of any type looks just like making a new object of type scanner. You type name equals new type parentheses stuff. Okay? All news look like this. Do you want me to say more about that? Yes. Yeah, so throw and the various things associated with it. We mentioned in passing when talking about files, you may need to talk about throws. We have not given it enough effort to be worth talking about in the exam. Okay? So if we want you to do something that would involve throws, we would already have the code that does the throws for you. Try and catch is something we won't talk about particularly in this course, mostly because we have to leave out something, and also it's not immediately useful in some other languages. It isn't as transferable knowledge as some other parts of Java are. If you want to learn about try and catch, go take 2110 and we'll talk about it at length. Yes? Oh, sorry, you were first. Let's come up here and then down. How to read from a file. And your question was? What other objects can we make? Okay. Let's talk about how to read from a file. Let's start by saying how we read from the keyboard. Okay? So I'm going to make a scanner keyboard. This is a new scanner. Okay, we use scanners to read things. There actually are ways to read things without scanners, but we always use scanners. Okay? So we've seen this many times. You've written it for 14 homeworks now. So I make a scanner for my keyboard, and then while my scanner, in this case we'll just read everything, while my scanner has a next int, say, I will read the int. And then I do whatever it is I think is worth doing with that. So perhaps I will print value typed modulo 17 equals the value typed modulo 17. Okay, so I can do anything with it I want if I put the plus sign there. So this is the general format of reading from a keyboard, right? And also how you write one of the types of loops. And so if I were to run this, if it will run, oh, run this, why is it not running? Oh, right, it is running, it's just waiting for me to type something. Okay, so if I were to run this, and I were to say 31, and I were to say 30, and I were to say 34, and so on, it just does the math for me. Okay, and it will keep doing that until I type something that isn't an int, or until I run out of input. And it'll do the rest of the program. Reading from a file is exactly the same, except that instead of putting system.in, I put the name of my file. Object. Not the path of the file object. This will require a throws declaration, which we do not talk about enough for it to be testable. Okay. And now, instead of reading from the keyboard, it reads from the file. And that was literally just that one change. Everything you know about reading from any other input source still works. You just do it from the file instead. Let me see more about that? Let's test it out. So I'll put some numbers in there, and I will run it, and I will see that it reads those numbers.
So where does the text file go?
Where does the text file go? In Eclipse, you put it inside your project, but not inside the source folder. Okay, that's just custom to Eclipse. That is not knowledge I'm planning to test you on, right? We just assume that you tell me a file that exists wherever I'm looking. The other question... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Should we be familiar with, like, operator precedence?
Operator precedence. Okay, I'll get to that after I take care of the question about what other types of objects can I make? So that was a question somebody asked. What types of objects can we make? We can make files. What other types of objects have we seen? We've seen scanners. We've seen strings, though you make they're unique in that you make them in a different way. And we've seen decimal format. I think that's it. I think those are the only types of objects we have seen to this point. Oh, turtle and world. Okay. Of these, string is magic. You don't use new. You actually can use new, but usually you just use the quotes directly. Everything else is made the same way. So I'm going to actually remove a string from the list. So these are the sorts of objects that we've seen how to make so far. And they all look the same, right? Type name to create the variable equals new type parentheses to create the object. There's a question about operator precedence. Do you need to know operator precedence? You either need to know operator precedence or you have to use parentheses. You should know that multiplication happens before addition, right? The basic mathematical operator precedence you should be familiar with. You don't need to know, for example, does and, or happen first. There are rules for that, but beyond sort of the basic math, I don't really care if you know it or not. But if you don't know it, then you better use parentheses so that it comes out the right way, because we know it, and so we'll grade based on how it'll actually work. Anything else you would like me to talk about? Yes?
Can you do an example of decimal format?
Can I do an example of decimal format? I can, although I will make a caveat. Okay? We use decimal format so little that I do not expect you to know the ins and outs of how decimal format works for this exam. Do you still want me to do an example of decimal format?
Sure.
Yes, okay. Decimal format. So, we make all objects the same way, right? We make the type. We make the name, we make equals, we make the new, we make the type, we put something in parentheses. For decimal format, what we put in those parentheses is a string which describes what we want our number to look like, such as 0.00 pound pound, for example. There's lots of things you can put here. This particular one says always put something on the left side of the period, always put at least two things on the right, and put up to four if you need them. Then let's do this. We'll say the string number equals fmt dot format math dot random. Let's actually pull that out so we can see what the original was. Double n equals math dot random. Okay. So the basic idea, we make a format object. It has one interesting method, format. We pass the number we want to have formatted into that. And then when we go to print it out, we can either print the original number, or we can print the string we created by using the decimal format object. Okay? Let me say more about it. Any other questions? Other things we should review before the exam comes along? Yes?
Do we need to be able to use printf?
No, you do not need to be able to use printf. If you want to use it, again, if you know how it works, you can. But it's not something we've discussed at all in class. The book barely even mentions this exists. So it's not something we're going to test you on. Is there any other things you want us to talk about? Yes?
Substring.
Substring, sure. Okay, so substring, if I have a, we have a string right here called number, right? So let's just print out a substring of that. Substring works by giving the name of the string you want to use dot substring, and then you can give it one or two numbers, usually two. Okay? What does it do? It takes a subpart of the string, hence the name. What subpart of the string does it take? It takes beginning at the first index and ending before we get to the second index. So in this particular string here, 0.3175 is what it happened to generate this time around. We will start at index 2, so index 0, 1, 2, 2 is the 3. And we will stop before we get to index 4. So we'll do index 2, index 3, we'll stop before we hit index 4. Do you want me to say more about it? Again, this is something we mentioned in passing when we introduced string. So you should kind of have some vague idea of what it means. You don't. We have not done significant work with it, so you don't necessarily need to know its ins and outs. Substring is a method. Yes. It is one of the four methods I expect you to know exist inside the string class. I guess five. I also expect you to know about length. I just didn't list it down because I assumed you knew about length. What are they? String methods, char at, substring, index of, replace, and length, which I didn't bother mentioning. Yes? Yes, so we did early on this example of how we do addition by one digit at a time. Is that what you're referring to? Yeah. So that falls in my mind under the CS in general area. It was mostly designed to be an introduction. So the details of that exercise, not testable. The concepts we are trying to get across about how do we define common activities might show up when we talk something in some question about why is CS important or something. You might be able to use it there. You should also know how to add multi-digit numbers yourself, but you don't necessarily need how to know how to describe that. Yes?
Can we go over index of?
Index of, surely. Index of, you could kind of think of as being the complement of substring. Okay? So index of, I give it a string and it tells me where that appeared. Okay? So I ask it to find some particular string, and it tells me the index of the first occurrence of it. This is not a great example because we can't see what we're dealing with. So let's make a different string here. Let's make a string str equals whatever. Okay, I don't really care what it equals. So when I ask for the index of some string, it will tell me the index of that substring inside the bigger string. Okay, so this is telling me that FH happens in index 4, and so I can see that 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Surely, sure enough, that's where it happens. If I try to ask for something that happens multiple times, like Y, it will tell me the first one. If I ask for something that is not in the string, it will give me negative 1 to tell me it didn't find it. So you could use this to tell us something's inside a string. Does it give you a non-negative number? You could also use it to find where something is in the string. Again, we expect you to know it exists. We have not really used it, so we don't expect you to know the ins and outs of how it's useful. Yes? Sure. Replace creates a new string where we replace one string with a different string. So, for example, I could take this garbage string I wrote, and I could replace all the H's with $3 signs. If I spell replace correctly, I could anyway. Okay. Let's print out the string afterwards, just so we can see what happened. So replace takes two strings, it is its parameters, and has a third one we're talking to in front of the period. It returns a copy of the thing before the period, where everything of the first parameter is replaced by the value of the second parameter, right? So it takes the str, replaces all occurrences of H with dollar, dollar, dollar. Do you want me to say any more about it? Yes?
What does replace return if H is in the conditions?
What if I try to replace something that isn't there? Okay? Let's try to guess. If I look at this string and I replace all occurrences of HHH with dollar, 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 how many occurrences do I change?
None.
So what will the new string look like? The original string. It actually does return me a new copy of the string. Not that we immediately care, but it looks exactly the same as the old one. Okay. We seem to be running down on questions, so I'll take it aside and talk about the other half of our study guide. We can come back to questions after if we want. How do you study for the test? I have to say, I always feel a little disingenuous saying this. My entire college career, I never studied for a test. I found the best way to prepare for a test was to get a good night's rest and not think about it. But most people apparently actually study four tests instead of just studying in general. So here's been best practices suggested by previous people who've taken the class. You will be writing code on paper. You do not want this to be the first time you've done it when you've got the test in front of you, so do that on your own. Okay? Writing code on paper, or you don't get red squiggly underlines, you don't get a clip suggesting what methods exist, right? It's a different experience. When you're doing this, a few small syntax errors are okay. Right? You forget a semicolon on one line, we're not going to take off points for that. You forget semicolons on every line, and we might. Okay? So try to do it right, but if you make a few small errors, that's okay. Most of the time, if we want you to write code, we will try to write all of the boring stuff for you. So if I'm interested in what you're going to put inside method main, I'll probably not have you write the header for method main in the class. And I'll never have you write the imports because I told you I don't need to test you on imports, okay? And then there'll be some space for you to write code. commonly spaced that has lines on it, because it turns out that we can read it if you write on the lines. And this is surprisingly unlike what we do if we give you blank paper. So how do you do this? I would suggest you go back over your homework assignments, try rewriting based on the description on the homework page without consulting your previous code. Just try writing it on paper. Then when you're done, see how close you got. Okay? If you don't want to do it on the homework, the textbook also has challenge questions in the green paper at the end of every chapter. I've listed a few here I think are interesting and might be useful for you to practice on. You're certainly welcome to practice on others as well. It's also worth noting, speed does matter. You've got 50 minutes. Okay? You can take the test in a lot less time than that. I know, I did. But then I knew what the answers were, so that is fair assessment. Anyway, it doesn't need to take you 50 minutes, but most of you will take close to that, if not all of that time. You will not take a minute more than that, because I will stop you if you do. And if you try to keep going after I stop you, then I will impose arbitrarily harsh penalties, because it just sort of makes me mad. You'll have 50 minutes to do this. So it is worth practicing. That may mean it's actually worth writing out common pieces of code multiple times, so you get in the habit of writing them, right? Write 5 for loops in a row just to get in the habit of writing a for loop can be a useful exercise. Yes?
Do the textbook questions have answers somewhere?
Do the textbook questions have answers? Yes, they do, once you solve them.
Oh.
So, answers in code, right? I have a description of the problem, you write code, you can try it and see if it works. There's a challenge, and this is part of the reason why a textbook may actually be better than your homework. Often, you get a little bit stuck, you glance at the answer like, oh, I knew that, but you didn't because you had to glance, right? So not having the answers makes that actually a better learning experience than having them. Other things to know, we will ask you to look at code and tell us what it does. So try that, okay? You might even try writing some code you're not sure what it does, guessing what it does, and then running it to find out. Okay? This can be a useful exercise. I would suggest you practice that before the exam. The other thing to note, as you're studying, not everything that's in the textbook is equally important, in our opinion. In general, things that you have had to do in lab or homework is more important and more likely to be tested than things you didn't. Things that we've had more than once or at length in lecture notes are more likely to be tested than things that we did just sort of passed over or didn't have at all. So that can be useful as well. Yes?
How was the class distribution last semester?
For years and years now, the average on exam one and in the course as a whole has been somewhere between 85 and 88. We get a very narrow range because we've got hundreds of students, right? So, law of large numbers. So, I expect this will be very similar to that. There's a little variation. I think we had one that went down to 83 as the average, but somewhere in that neighborhood. This is also, it is very common. People come into the test, all worried, oh, I'm going to fail. And then they look at the test like, ah, I'm really going to fail. And then they do it and they don't. Okay? Because it's not as hard as you think. And even though Eclipse isn't telling you you're right, you probably are. Right? And then we look at your code, you get the points. So I don't think it's worth worrying about it. Of course, most of you still will anyway. But anyway. Anything else you'd like me to talk about to help you feel prepared for the exam? Yes? Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll talk more about typing late in the semester. If you look at the schedule, you will see that way down here on April 7th, we will talk about typing. But let me just briefly give you an idea of what that means. If I have an int variable, there is no way to put a string in it. This is strongly typed. A lot of other languages are weakly typed. I have an int variable, And I have to work hard to get the string to fit in there, but I can cram it in somehow as an approximation of what struggly type means. Okay? So there is no way to break the type system in Java. If it is a scanner variable, it holds a scanner. You can just, it's absolutely holding a scanner. You can write mathematical proofs that guarantee it's holding a scanner, and it's never accidentally holding an int. Yes? Would I suggest writing comments for handwriting out code? Yes. I say that with some hesitation because I do not suggest writing comments if you already know the next piece. Right? So it can take time to write a comment, and if you know everything the comment's going to tell you already, why write the comment? That said, I personally think it can be beneficial. Let's back up a little bit, problem solving in general. When I give you a problem, okay, if you don't immediately think, I know the algorithm to solve this, you want to come up with that algorithm, right? What are the basic steps to do that? The first step is to ask yourself, how would I do this as a human, right? So try to give yourself the inputs the computer will give and see what you do to produce the outputs the computer would produce. Outline that, and I would suggest writing that down in comments is a perfectly fine thing to do. There will also be a couple pages of the exam, at least one, that isn't going to be graded at all, and you can sort of use a scratch paper to sort of sketch out some of that information if you don't want to use comments. And then once you have the sketch out, then you try to fill in the pieces. That said, I know that many of you will just start writing, oh, there's something repeating, I know I need a loop, and you'll write a loop. And then try to figure out what goes inside. And that can work. You can get good code that way. If that's the way you think about it, that's fine. But I tend to think in sort of this more hierarchical top-down approach. Yes?
What does it mean when you have a for loop in a while loop?
What does it mean when you have a for loop inside a while loop? It means you will do something several times, several times. So let's do this as an example. I have a while loop, and inside of it I have a for loop. This is the idea, right? So let's make this do something in I equals 0, I is less than 10, plus plus I, system.out.print. Oh, let's just print I, how about? Okay. And then it'll need some for while condition. How about, what should I use? How about this? Well, math.random is greater than 0.05. Okay. Here's a weird loop. What does it do? So we'll talk about two ways of figuring out. So suppose I were to give you this code. I wouldn't give you quite this nasty code with random in the while condition. But suppose I were to give you this code and ask you what it does. There's two ways you could go. You could start from the inside and work your way out, figuring out what every piece does. Okay. So I could look and say, okay, so this is going to print a digit. Right, because I will always be less than 10, so it'll always be one digit, so it'll print one digit. 10 times. Right? Over and over again. With a new line after each 10. So I can work from the inside, work my way out, and try to describe what it does. This suggests that I should see many lines with digits 0 through 9. And we can try it out and see. And surely I see many lines with digits 0 through 9. Okay? Another way of thinking about what this does, a different way of thinking about what this does, is I try to be Java. So I keep track of what I know. So the first thing I need to do is make a random number. I don't know, what's a good random number? I will just, let's try this. I will just randomly hit the number pad. Okay, so I make a random number. Is that bigger than 0.05? Yes, it is. So I go inside the loop, and I make I, which is 0. Now I need to print something. So I print out 0. And then I need to turn I into 1, and I print out 1, and I turn I into 2, and I print out 2, and I turn I into 3, and I print out 3, and I decide I'm getting bored, so I just jump ahead. Okay? And then I know my loop is done, so now I print out a new line, right? So I make a new line of output. And then I make a new random number. Let's see what my random number is this time. Okay, well, let's put our 0 point in front. It's still too big, so I do it all again, right? And so I print another one of these. I already know what happens inside now. And then I come back up here again, and I make another random number. Ha, it's small, and I'm done. Okay? Both of these work. If you can think of things and build them up in pieces, that can be faster, can feel more satisfying. But you can always just be Java. Java is stupider than a human. So if you try to do everything Java would do, you will succeed. Or you can succeed as long as you don't try to skip steps. Yeah. I don't know if that actually answered the question about what does 4 do inside while. Yes? Okay. Yes?
When telling what a program does, we like give us code. With arrays and complete sentences, we can just kind of do folded list.
It depends on how I ask the question. So let's say I had this code here. I might, for example, ask you, what does this code print? In which case, I would expect you to write 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that's what I expect your answer to be. I might say, describe what this does in English. In which case, you could say, it prints several lines of numbers between 0 and 9. I might have some more structure, right? What does it do if x is 3? What does it do if x is 5? What would it do in general? Right? So you answer the question as written. I will try to make any question about codes unambiguous about how you describe it if you understand the code. Hopefully I will succeed. Anything else people want to ask in the remaining